Hello, RV fanatics, and welcome to episode 16 of the RV Canucks podcast and the final episode of our Route 66 series. I'm kind of sad it's coming to an end, to be honest, because recounting our 2018 adventures, which covered about 23 days and just over 9,500 kilometers, or about 5,900 miles, give or take, for our American friends, it's actually made me really miss the road. So luckily, we're hoping to hit the road again in 2021 for another epic journey. So stay tuned for details in the new year about that one. As always, I am Melina, and I am joined by the stable half of the relationship, my husband Dan.
Hello.
And together with our teen and tween, we are the RV Canucks, a Canadian family of road trippers who make the most of our status as part-time RVers and lay down a ton of miles each year in our goal to see all of North America. We're glad you've decided to join us, whether as a listener or on Instagram or Facebook at RV Canucks or both. If you haven't listened to our first three episodes or our first three legs of our journey, you can check those out in episodes 13, 14, and 15 to get the skinny on what is happening so far in the trip. So I suppose this episode in particular isn't really Route 66 based, but it is the finishing leg of that trip, which we kind of went all the way down Route 66 and then looped back home. So on today's episode, we're going to talk about going through Nevada and Colorado, Utah, Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and home. So day 15 and 16 of our trip, on day 15, we left California, we left Pismo Beach, and we actually had to track down south again towards LA, and then just north of LA, we cut off on Highway 15, I think it is, that takes you right into Las Vegas, Nevada. It was, again, super hot. We've talked about this a lot. We had a heat wave sort of following us all across the nation and back. The drive from California to Nevada is kind of barren. There's not a lot there. It's very hot. At some points, they have signs on the side of the road basically telling you to not use your air conditioner in your vehicle because of the grades. They don't want you blowing your engine. So we tried that for a little bit with the truck, but sitting in a black truck with black leather seats in, 112 degree heat was not doing it for us. So we did keep the air conditioner on. We just drove pretty slow. We kept to that 55 limit.
Yeah. One of the things that happened over several days on this trip is we would have to go up a hill, and we never overheated the engine, but the dash would start to read the temperature of the engine. And so when you went down the back side of the hill, you would often cool down the engine. But one of the things you got to keep in mind, folks, a little thing in the back of your head, intuitively, sometimes when you're going faster down the backside, you're cooling things off because more air is going over the engine. So maybe just keep an eye, I guess word to the wise is make sure your vehicle's well-maintained, nothing to worry about. But just think about those kind of things and how you can keep the engine a little bit cooler as you're going through the mountains, especially in a heat wave.
Mm-hmm. So we did arrive in Vegas at the end of day 15, at the end of our travel day. We stayed at the Oasis Las Vegas Resort. So we're not going to get too much into the resort. We loved it. But we do talk about it in depth on episode 11, where we talk about whether RV resorts are actually worth the price. And some of them are, and this was definitely one of them. It was a fantastic 5-star RV resort. We loved every minute of it. The only negative I would give was that I did laundry there and it was really expensive, but I think that's probably more due to the fact that water in the desert is kind of scarce, so they charge you more for the luxury of doing your laundry. But it was the perfect place, and I mean perfect place, if you have an RV to experience Las Vegas. Like, it's maybe less than 2 miles away from the end of the strip. You can unhook, you can take your car in, you can take a cab in to the strip into Las Vegas, and we decided to stay there for 2 nights. So we had 1 day in Vegas, and Dan and I have never been to Vegas, which is, I'm sure, surprising to all of you since we're so wild and carefree, but we missed our Vegas days when we were younger, I guess. So this was actually the first time we had been. So doing Vegas, I think, with kids is totally different. The night we got there, we unhooked and we drove in to the strip. We found a parking garage because it was almost dark.
Yeah. We stopped in the parking garage. And again, much like Santa Monica Pier, parking was cheap and easy and nothing you needed to worry about if you're using a big pickup truck, unlike being in a place like Chicago or Toronto or Montreal.
Yeah. So we parked in a parking garage that was really close to like New York, New York. So if you know the strip at all, that kind of tells you about where we were, like right near the M&M store. So of course we had kids. It was nice time. We went and we saw the M&M store and we went to the Hershey store and we just walked around. We saw the New York, New York roller coaster. And then we crossed the road to go all the way up to the Bellagio because I wanted to see the Bellagio fountains. And I thought the kids would find that was really cool. And, you know, we could walk around the strip at night. One thing I will note is that they don't make it very easy if you need to cross the strip. Like there's bridges and stuff that will take you like inside casinos and then you have to go down an escalator and then outside of a casino to get back on the other side. But like kids aren't really supposed to be in casinos. So the whole thing was kind of confusing. Our kids thought they were badasses because they went into a casino, but I don't think we were supposed to be there.
Well, and Isla really wants to play poker. So we had to grab her by the collar more than once and haul her back.
Yeah, the kids totally thought they could live in Vegas and be totally fine. They would just make all their money at the casino. But we eventually found our way and it was a long walk. Like I was exhausted by the end of it. So, you know, say it was like a mile up to the Bellagio, like we probably walked 3 miles because of all the crisscrossing we had to do. But it did start raining. And one thing that like blew my mind is that at least this part of the strip, like it doesn't rain a lot in the desert, obviously, but the sidewalks were like almost like a marble finish. Like they were shiny.
Really smooth.
Really smooth. So when it started to rain, like you would fall. Like I was in Birkenstocks and I almost died. Like Isla saved me, my 9-year-old at the time. I started to go down and she grabbed me and held me up. But there was this poor girl wearing high heels in front of us who went down with her drink about five times. Yeah, if it's raining in Vegas, I don't know. Seems like a huge liability issue and a huge safety issue. But that's one thing to note. If you've never been in Vegas when it's raining, it gets slippery. So watch it.
Wear good shoes.
Wear good shoes, yeah. And definitely, if I had 4-inch heels, like I would have been a goner. Like I would have had a broken ankle.
And you know what? I think we all have this image of Las Vegas of like
Sin City.
Sin City, the drinking, the gambling, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But we were out after dark. We were walking the strip, having a good time. There wasn't really any hooligans. There was lots of good atmosphere. You know, we were definitely home before midnight. But for a family of 4 with kids, I don't think there was anything to worry about. Mm-mm. You could have a good time, didn't drop a lot of money, got to see something cool, and back to the rig.
Yeah, the Bellagio fountains were awesome. The kids thought they were really cool. Well done. And yeah, we walked back to the truck and grabbed some shut-eye. And then the next day, we drove down the strip again. But specifically, the kids wanted to go. They're big fans of Pawn Stars and they're big fans of Counting Cars. So we went to Gold and Silver Pawn Shop and toured the pawn shop. We went behind. We went to Chumley's Candy Shop. We met Chumley, got a picture taken with him. And then we drove over to Counts Customs to look inside the shop there, which was pretty fantastic.
Yeah. And you know what? Both of those places they're not heavy on your wallet. I don't remember what we spent, but it certainly wasn't a lot of money, if it was anything at all.
No, I think we just, at Counts Customs, we had to sign like a guest book or something to get in. I don't even know that we paid.
Yeah, I don't think we paid. I think I remember at Counts Customs, the merchandise, like a t-shirt, was pretty expensive. But hey, don't fault the guys. Got to keep the lights on.
Yeah, but it was really cool. We have a couple of motorheads in our kids, so they thought it was awesome. And we just kind of drove around and experienced greater Las Vegas. We came to experience the delight known as Raising Cane's chicken fingers or chicken strips, which is awesome, you guys. Like, we hear people talk about Chick-fil-A all the time, and this puts Chick-fil-A to shame. The most amazing chicken fingers, the best service. Like, they brought it to our table. It's a fast food joint. They brought our food to our table and offered us refills, and like, it was amazing. I would say that it probably compares within the service at In-N-Out as far as like service is concerned.
Yeah. The one thing you have to know, just a little side tangent here, is we're always mesmerized by the amount of fast food joints. And so when we go to the U.S., we like to try a fast food joint we've never been to before. So we've done Sonic, In-N-Out Burger, Raising Cane's, Chick-fil-A, and probably a few, Bojangles, just to try them out.
Yeah. And for reference, I tried to look it up once, but I don't know that I could get an accurate number, but it was something like in Canada, there's something like maybe like just over 200 different brands of fast food, and you can double that in the States. There's just so much variety. So you guys are probably, if you're listening to us from the US, you're like, okay, yeah, so what? Raising Cane's, whatever, like no big deal. But to us, it's like, it's so good. But it is seriously good. Like just the other day, I was watching my Instagram reels, and there was a hilarious video about a guy who had gotten pulled over by the cops because somebody had called the cops on him for doing Jell-O shooters in his car, but he was drinking the Raising Cane's sauce that came with his chicken fingers. So when the cop pulled him over, he had to show him, like, it's not Jell-O shooters. It was the little plastic cup of Raising Cane's sauce. And that's how good the sauce is. You will literally, like, lick it out of the container. It's so good. So if you've never been, put it on your list. You'll want to do it.
And Vegas was really easy to get around. Parking, driving, things to see, no traffic jams. I remember we saw the airport, which the girls thought was cool because it's really close to the downtown. Mm-hmm. I think as we headed out after, at the end of it all, we saw Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Just lots of little cool stuff is what makes a trip kind of neat. It doesn't cost a lot of money if you're a cheapskate like me.
For sure. And I think if we had another day, we probably would have driven out and did Hoover Dam. But like I said, we only had one full day in Vegas, and the girls wanted to swim in the most amazing pool at the RV resort. So we spent a lot of time just chilling, honestly, and getting laundry done and getting prepared for the next leg of our trip, which took us through Arizona to Moab, Utah, which is really only like 6.5 hour drive from Las Vegas. So it was a nice, easy drive. I did get us lost.
Yeah.
Well, I took a wrong turn during construction on the interstate just outside of Las Vegas. So that took half an hour to figure out and get back on the right route. But before long, we were on our way.
And it's just a scenic drive. I think, listen, folks, once you get to Moab, Moab is another change in geography. And that was what was amazing over these like 23 days that we were on, just the changes in geography. Utah is just amazing. There's tons of like scenic lookouts and places to just pull over and take pictures. And just a really good ride. I'd tell you, keep an eye on where you're going to get gas. We didn't have any problems like we did coming into California, but one of my little tips is to keep 20 gallons on the tongue of the trailer, a little jerry can, and we used that. So it was really cool. Just that whole drive in was just one of those chill days in the truck, listening to podcasts, eating food, and looking at sights, taking pictures, and stretching your legs.
And Moab's super like red rocks. Like it reminds, it's like Mars. It's just, it's amazing. It's like you're stepping in onto another planet. We stayed just outside of Moab proper on Interstate 190. So we stayed at the Archview RV Resort, which is a Sun RV Resort's property. Well maintained, very clean. We had no issues. The washrooms were a little bit dated. I think I showered there, but super clean. Like it just was a little bit older.
Girls used the pool. Just really cool. Here's what's really neat about this place. You're right up against BLM land, Bureau of Land Management, like, which...
Yeah, you're right on the edge of Arches National Park, basically.
Yeah, which... to Canadians is the equivalent of Crown land. And so at your campsite, if you ATV, you can leave from your campsite on your ATV. If you mountain bike, you can leave on your mountain bike. If you run, walk, whatever it is you want to do on that land, the trail literally comes right to your campsite, literally right to your campsite.
Yeah.
And so there's tons of things that you can do, scenic drives. We went downtown into Moab because we were there for two nights. We went down into the town. There's a little municipal museum. We went to the tourist information. And then you want to tell them about the dinosaur hunt?
Yeah. So we found out about the dinosaur track site at the Moab Museum, which again is it's a small museum. It's a two-story museum, but it's not very big at all. Like Dan said, it's a municipal museum. It's primarily run by volunteers. It was good for kids. Like they had a scavenger hunt all laid out that they give you a piece of paper and you have to find, you know, different exhibits, like clues in different exhibits to take it. And then you get a little prize. Like it kept their interest. I think it was really cool. I actually also, we learned about Moab's history as a uranium mill site, which I didn't know. And they're actually still in the process of moving all of that uranium out, like trucking it out of Moab still into another secure location somewhere else in Utah. So we learned a lot about Moab that we just didn't even know. It's not just famous for, you know, trails and dinosaurs. But one cool thing actually in the museum, the people at the museum told us about the dinosaur track site, but they also said, go out back of the museum. There's like a little portable, and we have some volunteers today, and they're actually working on some dinosaur bones. So some lady was just like canoeing down the river and saw something sticking out of a rock and called it in, and basically it turned out to be a dinosaur fossil, and they've dug it out, and then they have volunteers at the museum who it's you know, it's all wrapped in plaster when they take it out of the field, and then the volunteers kind of chip it away as much as they can, and then the scientists come back in and kind of do the detail work. But it just fascinated me. It was really cool. The girls got to see it and touch it.
Yeah, and when you're doing these trips, that's one thing maybe just keep in the back of your mind. Hit the local tourist information center, the local museum, because they've got tons of information. It's really inexpensive, and it's when you stop there that you learn about something else that you can check out, and that makes the trip really enjoyable to find out those little nuggets of information, because that's one thing like America does just awesome. The welcome centers, tourist information, all those things are just amazing.
Top notch, yeah.
Yeah, and so Moab to me is not pretentious, but it's got that outdoorsy feel like, say, Whistler in BC.
For sure. I would agree with that. And, you know, we went to both the museum and the information center. We went to the Moab Diner, which was fantastic. I had a really good burger. It's kind of like a 50s style diner, really good food. We went to the grocery store. That's actually where we discovered Kodiak cakes. Like the Kodiak pancake mix and muffin mix. It's fantastic. So we went to the grocery store, and then we went to the dinosaur track site, which is the Mill Canyon Dinosaur Trail. So this was right outside of where we camped, and you just have to look for like a mile marker, and I think it's around mile marker 141 on the Interstate 191, and so you kind of have to just watch the mile marker, and then you see it's called Mill Canyon Road, but it's really not signed. You just have to watch it, and then you turn off the interstate, off the highway, and then you're gonna see a sign that says private land, but that's okay. You just kind of cross over. You'll cross over a set of railroad tracks, and then you're on BLM land, and then you just follow this kind of dirt track road in, I don't know, it wasn't very far back from the road, like half a kilometer maybe, not even.
Yeah, it wasn't too far.
But we saw some antelope. Remember, we pulled over and there was antelope just in the field, like, you know, a stone's throw away from us. So we got some great photos of them. And we stayed there for the longest time until they kind of made their way. The girls thought that was pretty cool. And then we wrapped around this dirt track road. And then there's this dinosaur track site. And it's like this lake or mud patch that I guess dinosaurs walked in. And then it got covered up for years and years and years. And there is the coolest footprints in there. And they have probably, I'm going to say like half a dozen or more different dinosaur tracks. You know, there's a little boardwalk that kind of goes over top, because obviously they don't want you walking right on it. But they have a sign up that tells you what the dinosaur was, how big it was. And then it points out exactly, kind of illustrates which footprints are theirs. There was an alligator slide that was kind of, you could see, picture it coming out of the lake. Just the coolest place. And we were the only ones there. Like, I don't think a lot of people go there, and a lot of people don't know about it.
Yeah, it's a and we found out about that at the Tourist Information Museum. It's self-directed at your own pace, doesn't cost any money. Just a couple things, word to the wise, don't get in over your head if your vehicle isn't supposed to go off-road. And so we didn't really need to worry, because I don't think we were on anything worse than a gravel road, but there's more than one story out there of people taking their rental car and getting it stuck. So just don't get outside of your skill level or your vehicle's abilities, but this was certainly easy to get to with a half-ton pickup truck.
Yeah.
Never needed four-wheel drive. We did kind of explore a little bit more, but we cut it short because at the end of the day, didn't have a winch, didn't have a shovel, but lots of cool stuff. I remember there was also Bureau of Land Management camping, horse paddocks, all those kind of things. Like, we didn't even get to try that stuff out, but just so much more to see.
The dinosaur track site is actually right beside the Courthouse Rock campground, which is four or five sites on BLM land. I think there is a small fee for those ones. Some of them are free, but that one I think is about $15 a night. And they had, they had a little kind of horse shelter. Like, if you were on horseback, you could stay, pitch a tent. You could definitely bring an RV in there. You wouldn't want to go too much further than that campground, like Dan said, because we did actually use our 4x4 and we did go further than that campground, but it gets really sandy and there was a storm rolling in. The sun was going down and we had no water. So that's why we actually did turn around. But I would say if you were going to go any further than that Courthouse Rock campground, you would probably want to be in like an ATV or a Jeep or something that could really handle that sandy terrain, like Dan said. But definitely I would stay. I mean, it's dry camping, so you have no services, but I would definitely stay there if we went back.
And that was our day in Moab. Really great sunsets, lots of picture taking opportunities, really just one of those cool little things, which I don't think it's talked about enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went for like a little trail walk inside, like in Arches on our way as well. But there's a lot. Like, I mean, you could spend a week there and still not see enough. So we kind of just had to do a victory tour, I guess, like a short tour, and just kind of make notes for when we want to go back again. But Moab, I think, still is probably one of the most special places that we've ever been.
And then from there, we took off and went through Colorado. So do you want to talk about that a little bit? Or
yeah. So we stopped in Georgetown, Colorado, and we visited the visitor center there. It was a good place to stretch our legs. Cutest town ever. Like, the whole town, I think, is like a heritage building. Like, it is amazing. It's the cutest town. They have a great railway called the Georgetown Loop Railway, and it's like a steam train that takes you in a loop tour around the mountain. And Georgetown's kind of like down in a valley, so you're kind of surrounded on both sides by mountains, and it's really just picturesque and very beautiful. But we had opted, instead of doing the cost and the time to do the Georgetown Loop Railway, we moved that and did the Grand Canyon Railway. So we didn't get to do the Georgetown Loop, but I would go back to Georgetown in a heartbeat. I think it's a really good jumping off point if you are a hiker. There's a ton of trails in the area, mountain trails, and I just think it's a fantastic place to go to. Overall, it didn't take us, we stayed overnight in Colorado, but it didn't take us too long to get through Colorado. We stopped for lunch at that No Name Colorado, at that rest area.
Yeah, great rest area, washrooms, green space, lots of room to park the trailer. And there was lots of other RVers in there, you know, just threw out a blanket, had some snacks and lunch, and kids played a bit of frisbee and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I actually went back and I tried to find the name of the place we stayed in Colorado, but I actually couldn't even find it because it was one of these super last minute RV parky. Like, it was getting dark. There was a storm. It was raining and we were like, okay, we're bagged. Like, we need to stop for the night. So I jumped on RV Parky and I found this, like, the only RV park in the area. And I was like, okay, fine. I called the guy and he's like, yep. And he gave us really confusing instructions on how to get there. And he's like, you know what? Don't worry about it. Just come to, like, this exit and, like, call me when you're 5 minutes away and I'll meet you and guide you in. So we called. He met us at the exit where we got off the interstate and he guided us in. So it was kind of an RV park in transition. I'm going to say it was a newer RV park.
Well, he was still building it. And there was a few people that were living there full time. And, you know, hey,
it was kind of just in the middle of a farmer's field.
It was pouring rain. It was muddy. Everybody got in. We had a good meal. We went to bed. And when you leave town, you have to stop at the coffee shop 5 blocks away and pay for your site there, but hey, got the job done.
Yeah, oh, for sure. It was great. And on a rainy night, I think we showered. It had full hookups and we just had a nice cozy dinner inside the RV. And like Dan said, we had to find this cafe in this like tiny little one horse town and pay, and it was no problem. And then we got on the road and headed out. We actually had breakfast at the I-70 Diner, which is, you will know it if you see it, because it's got a gigantic, like, and a full size, like an actual pink Cadillac on top of their sign, 50s or earlier vintage diner, and they had a really good breakfast, so.
Yeah, and so maybe just a couple things. I remember when we drove, like, kind of Missouri, Oklahoma, Arizona, New Mexico, that whole stretch out to California there, it wasn't uncommon to see one or two accidents at around 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon on the highway, because the highway's long and straight and the sun's probably in your eyes. What was really interesting about Colorado, the roads through Colorado were through the mountains. There's ups and downs and twists and turns. And hey, a bad road in Colorado is like a good road in Michigan. I don't want to turn anybody off it. You don't need to worry if you're a novice, but you got to focus on your driving. And there wasn't one accident. And I just want to take a brag here that I got the best gas mileage of the trip going through Colorado, going up and down the mountains. And so the west side of Colorado is like really through the mountains. And by the time you get past Denver and you get to the east side, close to Kansas, it really flattens out. So just something that I remember is guy focused on doing the driving and his gas mileage. I wanted
should
to
I
brag.
Give you a slow clap right now? I feel like I need to
speed that clap up.
So where Colorado meets Kansas, I think the sky was really cool. Like, we saw a couple of storms roll off way in the distance. Like, it's really flat. You could see for a really long time. And I think at one point we almost thought that a tornado might roll through. Like, the sky was just amazing. But it's kind of cool to go from valleys so deep that you almost feel claustrophobic going through them to, you know, 4 hours down the road and it's completely flat.
Yeah, and I think there was a couple times we were starting to think, do we need to pull over here or what do we do? But like, some of those storms are just amazing. Point being, don't discount the plains or the flat spaces, because there's always amazing stuff to see.
Mm-hmm. So in Kansas, we made a quick stop at the Basilica of St. Fidelis, which is also called the Cathedral of the Plains, which is this beautiful cathedral, basilica, in a very small little town in Kansas. And it's kind of like out in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's a tiny, tiny town. Hamlet, I would even say. Like, there wasn't even any stores or anything that I saw, but gorgeous church, beautiful twin towers that are like 140 feet in the air. We were the only ones there again. Like, you just kind of open the door to the church and show yourself around, and there's a couple of brochures, but it was a beautiful place to stop and big, big parking lot that we stopped in. And so it was just nice to see that architecture kind of out in the middle of nowhere, really. And then we head on to Kansas City for the night.
Yeah. And that, well, I'm still glad we're married after that night. I thought that might have been a, there was nowhere to camp. There was no, we couldn't find an RV spot to pull into that night.
Yeah. So we stayed at Cracker Barrel, which was fine. We like Cracker Barrel. It's a great place to stay, but it was incredibly hot that day. We ate at Cracker Barrel. It was stifling. The problem was that it was hot and there was zero wind. Like, you could stand outside and not even a leaf in a tree was moving. It was just like stagnant air. And this has nothing to do with Cracker Barrel. They're so hospitable and fantastic. That Cracker Barrel, we even got free coffee in the morning. Anybody who stayed there got free coffee, but we went in and had breakfast anyway. We did run the generator a little bit because we did bring the generator on that trip, and we ran it before we went to bed to go to sleep. But the problem was this Cracker Barrel backed on to like Holiday Inn or something. So people's hotel rooms are like, the trucks parked basically right outside people's hotel rooms. So at like 7 o'clock at night, we ran the generator for half an hour to cool down the trailer with the air conditioner. So it stayed cool for maybe a couple of hours, but gosh, you guys, like I went out, like I'm in my skivvies, like in my PJs.
In her best nightie.
In my best nightie. I'm not even kidding you. And I literally went outside at 3 o'clock in the morning and I stood outside the trailer like a crazy person with like my arms outstretched, just like hoping to catch a breeze, and there was nothing. And I cried that night. It was that hot. I was like, I can't do it. And the kids came out of their bedroom and they slept. One of them curled up on the table, I think, like in the main living area because their bedroom was stifling. I ended up digging out one of those like battery powered fans that you would like carry around with you. And it has like a little spray bottle that you would like mist yourself in. And I burned through all the batteries we had in the trailer, and I just laid on the couch in the living area of the trailer and just like blasted this tiny little fan on my face until I fell asleep. It was the worst sleep I've ever had.
Yeah. And just somebody out there is saying, why is this guy not running his generator at night? The generator we have, we didn't originally buy this generator for RVing. We bought it before we even had the trailer. We bought it because we lived in a place where the power went out a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think what I want to do before our next big trip is to get a proper RV generator, a proper generator that we can use for RVing that we can put in the back of the truck.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, noise makes a huge difference. Like, this thing is so loud, it would probably rattle windows. So we didn't want to be bad neighbors and disturb, you know, the people sleeping in the hotel or jeopardize the ability for other people to camp there at this Cracker Barrel, you know, if it ended up getting shut down or something because the hotel complained, you know, who knows. But yeah, definitely, I think.
So we made trails out of there and we went to Marceline. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so we made a little detour in Missouri and we went only about 125 miles into Marceline, Missouri, which is actually Walt Disney's hometown. I mean, he lived in Kansas City and a couple of different places, but when he was about 9 or 10, his family owned a farm in Marceline, Missouri. And that was actually, he used the downtown of Marceline to model the Disneyland, like the Main Street USA, kind of that small town feel. And they have put a museum in that town called the Walt Disney Hometown Museum. So that was something we really wanted to see. And it was a little bit out of the way, but I'm so glad we went. I'm so glad we went. It is the cutest little town. There's not a lot going on there, I think.
Past its heyday.
It's past its heyday, for sure. I think that's probably the best way to put it. But what a cool museum. It's not very big. It's in the old rail station. And the railway, like, plays a huge part in this town over the years. And we actually met one of the ladies who runs it. Her name is Inez. And she's actually getting up there. I think she's close to 90 now. But we went and we met with her. And she took us into a couple of the exhibits. And she explained what a few of the artifacts were in the museum and the exhibits. And then she told us, you know, a super cool story. Like, her and her husband were actually friends with Walt Disney and his wife Lillian, and they came into town, they invited them into town to open up the town swimming pool that they had named after Walt Disney, and they of course agreed. And Inez tells this great story about how everybody in the town got together, but they were kind of, the hotel at that time was even past its prime even back then, you know, in the 60s, and so they didn't want to put up up, you know, Walt Disney in this little hotel that wasn't in very good shape. So they decided to house them in Inez and her husband's house. I think his name was Rush. But they didn't have any good furniture, she said. She said, we spend all our money building this house and it had air conditioning. It was the only house or the only building in town that had air conditioning. But we spent all our money on the house, she said, that we couldn't afford any furniture. So they had like hand-me-down furniture. And so they basically went around the town and with their pickup trucks and they gathered all of the nicest pieces of furniture from everybody's houses and brought them in and like staged the house so that it would have nice furniture for Walt Disney and his wife to stay in. And I just thought that was the cutest story. And I'm so glad we went and saw some of these exhibits about his early life and, you know, stories about his generosity. And it was just really neat. And I think if you're a true Disney fan, you have to make the drive there. And if only to support this town and support the museum that runs completely on donations. So that's something that was definitely the highlight of our trip. After visiting the museum, we went just a couple of miles down the road to the old farm where Walt Disney or where the Disney family lived. And there's a barn in the back that's the recreation of the original barn that was there. And you can actually sign it inside and put a little message in. So our girls signed that inside the barn, which was really sweet. And there's a tree out back called the Dreaming Tree. That was actually where Walt Disney started all of his cartoon ideas and all of these things on his property. And that original tree, I think it got hit by lightning or something, but they had like a sapling of it somewhere and they ended up planting this new sapling and they used like dirt and water from Disneyland. They brought in dirt and water from Disneyland to plant this new sapling that's growing, which was kind of cool. So again, I'm nerding out, but it was really fun. So from Marceline, we had a nice lunch in the park. The town park was great. It had a nice little band shell and washrooms, and it's right outside the museum. So we just kind of pulled the trailer around, parked on the side of the road, got our picnic lunch done up in the kitchen and brought it out and ate in the park.
Yeah, just keep in mind, like from a logistics point of view, we talked about pulling into Colorado. When we pulled into Colorado and camped for the night, we did not unhitch. When we got to Kansas, we did not unhitch at the Cracker Barrel parking lot. Everything that Melina has described, we did towing the trailer around the town without a problem. Mm-hmm. Like we haven't unhitched in days at this point. So it's really easy to get around with the 29-foot trailer.
Good point.
And so don't get intimidated by that. You know, dive off into these little towns and see what little towns are made of in Canada and the USA.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. That's a really good point. So when we were done our picnic lunch, we hopped back in the truck and we drove out to Springfield, Illinois. So in total, we went, you know, 320 miles maybe that day. So not a lot of drive time, but we spent a number of hours in Marceline, which kind of took up that day. But we stayed at the Illinois State Fairgrounds. And this was amazing. They were actually setting up for a horse show, which we didn't know. So they could have been at capacity. Luckily, I think they had one serviced site left. And we would have just, I mean, it's fine. We would have just parked in the parking lot with no services. And that would have been okay too. But we had heard that it was a great place to camp. It's a cheap place to camp. And I think it was like $29. We got there at about 9 o'clock at night. And he said, yep, there's one service site left. And I think it was, you know, $29. He pointed out the bathrooms. He said, here, back in here, you're all set to go. And we hooked up, we showered, we ate inside. We got to watch a really cool lightning storm from the fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. That was kind of neat. And then we checked out the next day. So that would have been day 22 by this point when we checked out.
And I'd say we didn't do this, but I think both of us had the same thought at the time. Like if we ever come back here, this would be a great spot. There's not a lot of grass. You're not going to have a fire. But if you wanted to park a few hours from Chicago and like take the train in, we thought about maybe this would be a good spot for us to research that. Really inexpensive, really friendly, really safe. So maybe just keep that in the back of your mind if Chicago's on your list, that maybe this is a spot you want to check out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we checked out the next day.
Yeah. And when we left, the fellow that was there at the fairgrounds, he said, oh, he's like, are you going to go see the Lincoln Monument? And we're like, oh, well, we kind of have to hit the road. And he's like, see those trees right there. And he's like, it's on the other side of those trees. So hit it on your way out. So we're like, okay, cool. So we drove in to the cemetery. It's in the cemetery in Springfield there. But we had, again, no problem parking. They had a ton of parking. And so we just rode around. And I mean, it's very obvious once you enter the graveyard, which one is the Lincoln Monument. It's gigantic. There's a house, a purpose-built house right beside it where, you know, the graveskeeper or the monument keeper would live. I don't know if they still do or not. But it was a very cool monument. You could go inside it, which was a surprise to me.
Yeah, you can't miss it.
Yeah, you can't miss it. It was just fantastic. They had, you know, a couple of statues outside and a ton ton of plaques and explaining what everything was. But then you go inside and it's kind of like a circular mausoleum kind of inside where he's buried. And is his wife? I think his wife's buried in there too. I can't remember.
I'm not sure, but
it was neat. It was super cool. Very like reverent.
It's one of those things you're like, oh man, I didn't know we were going to do that today. And it was really awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's just the nice surprise, the nice extra little treat of the day. And again, hey, we did not unhitch. We still have not unhitched since before Colorado. And we're doing this with the trailer, folks. Like, it's not hard.
And actually, we didn't unhitch till we got home.
Yeah.
Because we stayed that night. So day 22, we saw the Lincoln Monument and we busted all the way through to Lansing, Michigan. That was about 6 hours without stops. So we, you know, obviously stopped to eat and use the rest areas and things like that. But we just stayed on points that last night. We had points on our, you know, hotel points that we had gathered up and we stayed the night at a hotel in Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah, it's a great example of how do you travel further and make it easier. And that's where we made strategic use of a hotel,
mm-hmm.
right? And next morning we had breakfast for free. We were already hitched up and off we went.
Yeah, and the great thing about that is that we were only 4.5 hours from home that final day. So even if we had to wait at the border, even if, you know, this, even if that, even if we had to stop for gas or whatever, we knew we were still going to get home at a reasonable time. And that's why we did the hotel stay the night before, because that allowed us, I think we were home just after lunch. And then we got everything unpacked. We cleaned the trailer and we hitched it up and we put it back into storage.
Yeah, I think your mom made us dinner that night. She mm-hmm. kind of made dinner for us. I mean, so a couple of little things here. We stopped in Woodstock, which is maybe an hour and a half
yep.
from home. Just was time to use the washroom. And it was at a service center in Ontario. So Woodstock, Ontario. And there was a family in a chartered bus, not a full school bus, something a little bit smaller, like a shuttle bus. And they were having some trouble. They were trying to get their grandma's birthday party in Toronto. And I think a couple of ladies had been into the sauce. So they were a little bit happy. And a couple of the gentlemen were worried we're going to miss grandma's birthday. And the driver didn't know what was wrong with the vehicle. And so that was where we pulled out the spare fuse kit that we keep for our trailer, popped in a new fuse for something or other that had blown on them, and we got them on their way, and hopefully they made it to grandma's, and hopefully most of them were still standing up when they got there.
But I totally forgot about that. Yeah, they had like a party. It was a party bus atmosphere, but they were all Scottish, and they had flown in from Scotland, a number of them,
right,
to go to this 90th birthday party. And so we pulled out the fuses, and we're like, yeah, what kind of fuse do you need? And I think we gave them a spare, just in case it blew again.
Yeah, yeah.
But our girls do Highland dancing, so when we found out they were from Scotland, like, our girls danced for them while they were off, like the other guys were off changing the fuse, which was really cute. They did some Highland dancing for them, which they thought was awesome. And
yeah, so like, listen, those are those things that we've talked about already, like make use of a hotel, keep the spare fuses,
mm-hmm.
you know, give somebody a spare fuse because you never know when you're going to need help from somebody else, so pay it forward. Keep the gas handy because sometimes you just need 20 gallons to get where you need to go. I think it was one story I had forgotten to tell you. I think in the last episode I had knocked one of the bars off the hitch pulling into the Pismo Beach campground. Well, I did it again later on and I needed the toolkit to kind of bolt things back on and get us down the road. So we had the toolkit. So those are all the really simple little things. It just keeps your trip going along and doesn't cause it to become a disaster. Mm-hmm. Did it cost you an hour here and there? Absolutely. But mm-hmm. you'll make it up somewhere else. But if you hadn't had the fuses, you hadn't had the gas, you hadn't had the toolkit, that would have been a disaster. And it wasn't, because you have those little things that are all real cheap that make the trip so much easier.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think if you want to see a really good list, go to the show notes for episode 10 or listen to episode 10, because we actually list our pick for like your top 10 RV essentials, and stuff like the toolkit and the fuses and stuff are in there, because it's all great to have like fancy Keurig coffee makers and Instapots and like countertop ice makers, but literally when the poop hits the fan, which is gonna happen at some point, you want to have those essentials. So maybe check out episode 10 if you're interested in seeing that list. So that's it. That's Route 66. That's 23 great days of our life.
Yep. And I think I've always said this, a good trip always wants you to go back because you missed something, and we missed so much on this trip. You can probably do it 3 times and still not see everything and be mm-hmm. satisfied each time.
Yeah, the girls are itching for another trip down Route 66, because they, you know, some of it, I think they're probably, maybe it's just their age, but they feel like they're starting to forget some of it. I certainly have not forgotten anything. But like I said, I mean, if you look at leg 2 on episode, 13, when you look at like in those 2 days between Oklahoma and Arizona, how many times we stop, and we could stop that many times again and not see the same things. Like, there's so much to see on Route 66. It's amazing. Yeah,
and just listen, folks, just push your boundaries just a little bit more. We're on episode 16. But remember, back at the beginning, one, two, or three, I don't know which episode, I was telling you about the headless deer that we ran over top of. So, you know, push your boundaries. You're a weekend camper, and then you go for a week, and then a little bit longer, and it's just a few hundred more miles and a few little tips, and you'll be crossing
king the road or queen of the road.
I'm king of the road.
Yeah,
it's probably a good spot to end it.
Okay, on that note, that's it, and we'll see you next week. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.